All right, so we have very special guests today talking about a really interesting subject. Please introduce yourselves.
I'm Sean Mortazavi, architect in the Visual C++ group working on Python.
Excellent.
And I'm Dino Veland, and I'm a developer on Python tools for Visual Studio.
Awesome. Now, people on Channel 9 are familiar with Python tools for Visual Studio. If they watch This Week on Channel 9, we've pimped it before and sent people to your Codeplex site.
Thank you.
Why don't we step back a little bit? Tell us a little bit about Python and this project that you've done.
Okay. So Python actually has a pretty rich history at Microsoft. We started out with Iron Python, the DLR work, Jim Huguenin was here. So a lot of work has gone into the whole Python stack from several years ago. And one of the tools that resulted out of that effort was Iron Python Tools, which was a plugin for Visual Studio. And about a couple of years ago, we were in the technical computing group, and we were looking at various scripting languages. And of course, Python was becoming more and more popular. So we figured, wouldn't it be great if we enhanced Visual Studio based on the previous work that was done to allow much richer development experience for developers, but not just for Iron Python, for any Python. You know, there is C Python, which is the C implementation of Python, or Python implemented in C. There is Iron Python, there's Jython, which is the equivalent of Iron Python, but for JVM. And there's PyPy, which is an advanced optimizing Python interpreter. So we said, let's actually take the rich environment that Visual Studio has for debugging, profiling, project management, whatnot, and enable users to use any Python they want. So this is how this project was born. And we got headcount for it, one. And
that's growing.
Yeah, it's growing.
Three now.
Yeah. So the 1.0, which shipped in August, actually was done with one dev and one test. And me, jack of all trades, PM, test, dev, whatever it took. It started in January. Well, it started in November of last year. We did an alpha in January. March, we did a beta, and RTM in August. So it's a very fast-paced project. But the most important part of it that I haven't mentioned, that it's open source and it's free.
Wow.
And open source, we mean Apache 2.0. And by free, we mean you can use the integrated shell and plug this into it, and you get a complete Python development environment, world-class, and you don't have to spend any money. If you like some of the advanced Visual Studio features, you can upgrade to, you know, Pro and Ultimate to get a profiler and some other goodies.
Nice. That is awesome.
And as Sharok mentioned, this started in our technical computing group. And the reason why it started there was because Python is a great fit for the technical computing domain. So it has all sorts of great libraries like NumPy and SciPy for doing advanced math, a visualization of your results, and there's even great UI stuff in there for scientific apps as well. So
Absolutely. That's
the reason why we picked Python, was that it was very strong in that domain, but Python's strong in other domains, and we're starting to actually embrace and look at those other domains going forward.
Excellent. And you mentioned the scientific computing or you know, the great math libraries. We had John Platt, I believe, is his name.
From the show group.
From the show group, MSR, right, who uses Iron Python. And that's actually a really interesting project. So
yeah, it's great. We love show. Basically, if you go to our webpage, we have a link to their environment. It's a data playground whereby you can use Iron Python, access to the full .NET frameworks, and additional math libraries and visualization aids that they've added. And you can use that to essentially figure out your data, come to insight, with just a very simple, readable scripting language.
Awesome. Now, just to be clear, before Dino starts like coding, to be really clear, any Python in Visual Studio,
right?
Yep.
Period.
Yeah. Think about PTVS or Python tools for Visual Studio as the IDE, where it's completely independent of what Python environment you want to use. It's got plugins that you can put in whatever, not only which version of interpreter you want, but which language version. So we support from 2.5 all the way to 3.2.
Nice.
And, you know, some of the features vary by which interpreter you use, but in general, most of them work. And certainly for CPython, they all work.
Now, for people who don't program in Python, and there's a lot of niners out there that are writing C# all the time.
Yep.
Or perhaps they're writing C++, we hope. There's some of you watching this. Interestingly, you're on the C++ team. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that maybe later.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about the language, like
sure.
some of the semantics?
So it's a dynamic language. So you know, if you're familiar with JavaScript or Ruby, it's similar to those languages. But it's also completely different from those languages. It's actually a very sane language as far as dynamic languages go. So, you know, like Ruby has some insane dynamic concepts inside of it where, you know, like everything lives on object. Python is pretty close to C# in the way it works. You have classes, you can do operator overloading, kind of all the stuff that you would expect out of a modern language is there in Python. But at the same time, you get all of this great stuff out of its dynamic capability. So, you know, you don't have to go and declare interfaces ahead of time. You can just write a class and put some methods on it. You can have another class that has the same method name, and you can call both of those methods using the same invocation point. So
cool.
It's extremely powerful, and then it, you know, as the core language being similar to C#, it's very nice. There's a lot of extended capabilities that it has like you can extend the type system using something called metaclasses, and there's all sorts of cool, powerful techniques that you can use in there.
Awesome. It's worth mentioning that although Python is interpreted, there's a lot of good, rich facilities to calling into native code. So you will see a typical, you know, being a dynamic language and having a REPL, you can very quickly prototype what you want to do. And then go ahead and run the profiler and say, these are my hot spots. What can I actually call out to native code? Or what existing libraries can I use out there that have already been optimized, written in C? There are things like Cython, which within Python, you can write, decorate the types, and it'll generate C for you, automatically compile it and bind it in.
Nice.
Or actually just go ahead and call MKLs or whatever through NumPy and other libraries. So you get the best of both worlds. Come to insight very quickly, optimize where you need to instead of having a very large debug edit cycle and profile cycle.
Awesome.
And if you're scared of C, there's always PyPy as well, which is an advanced JITting implementation of Python that is now beating CPython on almost all the benchmarks. And
wow.
It's actually written in Python itself, which is rather amazing. So it's a cool project, and of course it works with PTVS as well.
Awesome. Excellent, man. Well, let's dive into this.
All right. So here's Visual Studio that we all know and love. And I'm just going to start off here and create a new project so that I can show you some of the basic editing features. As this laptop's a little bit old and slow, and I have 4 copies of VS, so hopefully everything will get paged in quickly. So we have a bunch of different application types here that I can create. So I'm going to start off with the Python application, but you can see from our IronPython heritage, we've retained our IronPython support both for WPF apps, which you can use the built-in designer inside of VS to create, or even our Silverlight pages. But let's just go ahead and make the basic Python application.
So how did you know which interpreter to pick?
So there's a default that's configured. So I can bring up tools options here, and you can see that the default interpreter is selected, and it's Python 2.7. And so that'll use what it'll use by default. I can also go into the project properties, and I can set it on a per-project basis as well. Okay, so this is your basic editor. I can start off by typing some Python code. I can use import to bring in some other modules. And you can see these are all of the modules that are available from the standard library. So we get completion there. I can, you know, kind of start dotting into these modules and get information about them. Another common way to bring stuff in Python is using from import, and that works. And you can see I get some nice help here for the tooltips on the right-hand side telling me what each of these things is. I'm not actually going to use any of those imports, but so let's get rid of those. So one of the cool things about our editing experience in general is that we do a very rich job of modeling what's going on with your Python code. So Python's a dynamic language, and there's no type declarations. I can write this function definition, and it has a parameter called A. So what is A's type? Well, A's type is ultimately inferred based upon what I'm going to call and pass in when I call F. So here I'm passing in 42, and let's just kind of do something a little bit more interesting and return a value out. And when I dot through this function, I'll give you the completions for all of the integer methods that are available in Python. If instead I was passing in a string into this, and then I dot through, we'll give you all of the string methods. And if I were to do something crazy, like call it once with a string and call it once with an integer, we'll actually give you back the intersection of the methods that are available there. And that's because, you know, you can get a string or an int back, and these are kind of the valid things that you can do with it. You can actually turn that off to return the union of things, but by default, we return the intersection because we think that'll make you more successful. So that's real basic function definitions. Of course, Python has classes as well. So I can go ahead and make a class that inherits from object here. And in Python, this parameter, which is called self, is actually explicit, so I'll put that in there. I can put some documentation in here. These are doc strings. They're similar, if you're familiar to C#'s XML comments, they're like that. I can do something, you know, like put doc strings on functions. I can define a constructor and assign a value into a field. And, you know, no types here, nothing static, but then we can call C, we understand the constructors there, we give you the doc string. It's a very familiar experience if you're used to Visual Studio. I can pass that value in. That value is now getting assigned to my field. I can come in here and dot through my A object, which is an instance of the C class, and you can see I have value here, and we understand that's a string, and so then I can, you know, dot through that, and I know all the string methods. So we try to do a real good job of modeling your classes and your functions and understanding how all the types flow through and giving you a rich experience with IntelliSense. But for Python, you really have to go further than just doing that in order to give users a really good experience. So you know, one thing that statically typed languages like C# or C++ have is generics or templates, which let you have these container types, which is what they're frequently used for, at least in C#, that, you know, are strongly typed, and so you get good type inference for them. So in Python, you just have generic container types. So I can, you know, make a list of objects like this, right? And we all know that's a list of strings, but to Python, it's just a list of objects. But we understand it's a list of strings for the IntelliSense, and we'll give you completions based upon that. A more sophisticated example of that would be something like, I have a list, and it contains a person's name, their age, and their height. And Python has this great unpacking syntax. So I can do name, age, height, and people inside of a for loop. And I can just print those all out. And if I come here and hover, you'll see name is str, age is an int, and height is a floating point value. So we have understood the unpacking syntax. We've understood the individual elements or different types within the nested tuples. And of course, IntelliSense continues to work on all of those things as well. Now that's just constructing these lists by hand, right? And that's not usually how your program works. So we go even further, and if I have an empty list like this, I can go ahead and append values into it. And so it's a list, and that item is an integer. So we model all of the methods that actually manipulate these objects, and the IntelliSense engine understands all of that to give you a really rich experience while you're developing and writing your code. And likewise, that works for dictionaries. So I can do something like pop. And we understand that we just popped an integer out of that. So we try to go a long way to give you a really, really rich experience with IntelliSense. So that's the basic editing experience. But a lot of time, we are looking at code as well, rather than actually typing code. And we want a good experience there as well. So here I have this Python library that's called Beautiful Soup. It's an HTML parsing library that's out there. and freely available. And I'm just going to show you some of the basic stuff that we support here. So here's the find one method inside of this guy. And I can go ahead and do find all references on this guy. And we'll see all of the callers to this function, just like you would if you're developing C#. One of the cool things about this is if I go to one of these definitions, you can see that this thing is passing in self.findAllNext here. And when I hover on it, you can see that it's a method of the page element objects. And I can actually do go to definition on this. And I can see here's where that method's defined. So backing up, going back to the find one method, we know that the callers are all passing in different methods here to this find one method. And so, if I was looking at this from just looking at find one, not knowing what was coming in here, I can actually do find all references on the method parameter itself. And we'll actually tell you where the method parameter is being used here in the references. But we give you this second category, which is called values, which is actually the values of the methods that are getting passed in here. So when I actually call method, we understand those values as well. And we'll actually give you signature help for all of these methods that are getting passed in here. So if you're doing it in C#, this is like you're getting signature help for a function that's being passed in on a delegate, which C# doesn't do anything like that. So this is like a really good way to understand what's going on with your code, how it's being used while you're actually developing it, and so you can have a better idea of what's going to happen when you're actually calling this random delegate here.
That's awesome.
Okay, so that is kind of the core IDE experience. There's also an object browser, which is a standard Visual Studio feature. So if you're coming in looking at some code that you're not familiar with at all, I can kind of come in here and get a good overview of what the structure of the code looks like. And I can see these different classes. I can drill into the classes and get the members and all of that stuff. So that's a pretty standard Visual Studio feature that we just totally support as well.
Now, what about debugging?
Oh, we support debugging too.
Which is cool. I mean, you just set breakpoints and blah, blah. I mean,
it's
a great feature of an IDE.
Yeah, I will show some more debugging later.
Cool.
I have a demo that I'll actually include some debugging in. So.
Great.
Excellent. Did I mention all of this is free?
At that point, I think we are ready to, or do we want to do profiling?
Why don't you go ahead and do profiling as well?
Okay.
Since you're in the IDE, it might make sense to just continue.
All right. So here is PyStone. PyStone is the standard benchmark that ships with Python. It's actually a horrible benchmark, but it is included with every single Python distribution. So it's an easy one to demo, and you can run this at home if you'd like to play along. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the Analyze menu here, as this copy of Visual Studio page is in. And we have this Launch Python Profiling option here. This actually requires Visual Studio Ultimate, I believe, because that is where the core profiling infrastructure is available. All of the other features are available with the free integrated shell, which you can download. So I can select an existing project, or I can just set it at an interpreter and a script to run. I'm just going to go ahead and use the project that I have in here.
So, Dino, how does the profiling actually, is it IP sampling, or is it code injection, epilog, prolog?
So it is, it's actually tracing. So Python has a standard mechanism called sys.setTrace, and there's also sys.setProfile. And you get callbacks whenever a function is entered and exited. So there is some overhead with this. Your program will run slower when running under profiling. And it's also at the function level and not at the line level. That's the mechanism that's available for Python.
Okay.
So this is, if you're familiar with Visual Studio profiling, this is basically what you're used to seeing, right? So here we have the hot path that Visual Studio is telling us about. It includes the inclusive time and the exclusive time. That's the time spent in the individual function or the function and all of the things that it calls. I can drill into an individual function here, and we'll show the source code, and we'll show this nice view of the function that called it and all of the things that this thing is calling as well, and how much of the time is being spent inside of them. Personally, I like not the call tree view, the caller callee view, which is similar to that but a little less graphical. And it's nice because you can sort by different things and drill in, and you know, I can come here and view the source and quickly figure out what's going on with my program and why it's going slow. So that's profiling, and I think we are ready to turn it over to Sean for the next demo.
All right. Let's go ahead and give me the plug. It is the right side. Let me just screw it in just to make sure it doesn't come out.
Not living dangerously.
All right. How's that looking? Reasonable?
Yep.
One of the things that I think I didn't cover quite is actually who uses Python. Why is Python really important? If you look at a lot of the top web properties out there, such as YouTube, Reddit, Quora, they're all Python stacks. There are desktop apps such as Dropbox that a lot of people use for synchronizing their files. Other environments like Mercurial, Khan Academy just started teaching programming and they've chosen Python. Python is really becoming the language that a lot of colleges, both from freshman as your CS 101 all the way to doing your PhD thesis in. Mainly because, again, the power of the language, the simplicity of the language, and all the wonderful libraries that are out there for any domain. If you're in biotech, in Python, astronomy, mathematics, let's say natural language processing, NLTK, whatever, there is something. This is where the whole batteries included part of Python comes in. So it's really important. One of the strengths of Python, of course, is scientific computing. And given that that's where we actually came from originally, I would like to give you a quick demo of one of the features of PTVS, which is support for doing MPI programming. MPI programming, MPI stands for Message Passing Interface. It's a standard library and standard programming model, SPMD style, that runs on all the OSs. The standard library that everybody uses is MPitch. Open source. So if you have a Windows HPC or you're in a Linux cluster, you usually end up using MPI for doing this kind of coupled message passing large scale parallel programming. Why would you use a cluster to do this stuff? I mean, you might want to know tomorrow's weather, and on a fastest PC, it might take 3 days. So you take all that code, you chunk it up, and then you do the math behind it, essentially lots of matrix operations. And you know, CFD, whatever you need to, and then the problem gets split up, and the results brought back. And but as you know, parallel programming is very, very error prone. So having a really good debugger is an absolute requirement, and that's what we've done. So again, in the free version of PTVS, you're able to do MPI programming for both CPython version of the language and for .NET version of the language, IronPython. The way Python itself talks to the MPI libraries is through some wrappers. In the case of CPython, is Lisandro's MPI for Pi. In the case of IronPython, these are high-performance wrappers for .NET by Doug Greger and Andrew Lonsdale. So with that, let's just go ahead and get started. Here I have the classic Hello World program for showing MPI programming. What it does is actually not that important. It throws some darts in a unit circle inside a square, and the ratio of darts that hit the circle versus the square gives you an approximation of pi. So basically, we divide this over a bunch of nodes on a cluster, and we then collect the results back and give you hopefully something close to 3 point something on a very, very expensive cluster.
It's the Monte Carlo method of calculating pi. Completely useless, but a nice demo.
So the way you get started is I have the program there. I'll hit Alt-Enter on the project. And one thing that I'm not sure you came across is that we have multiple debugger launchers, one for .NET, one for standard Python, and one for MPI. This is the one that uses the built-in Visual Studio remote debugging capabilities to actually talk to a bunch of nodes in a cluster and get the information back. So in order to configure this, you go look at your cluster. So now we just went ahead to Active Directory, found whatever clusters are available on your network. We found the head node that you specified, or this could be localhost. You could do all of this stuff locally on your laptop, debug it, and then zap it out onto a cluster of 128 nodes of 8 cores each, you know, lots of memory. Then we know, based on the capabilities of the head node, how many processors this cluster has. So you pick one. I picked 8 here. Then you can specify how you want this stuff scheduled. Do you want each of these SPMD instances to be put on a core, or do you want each one to be put on a node? Because then within each node, you might want to do further parallel programming on your own. So you want the whole machine to each rank, essentially. Or you can do it per socket. So a bunch of options. Generally, you don't specify which nodes you want, because essentially there's a job queue, and whoever comes based on the priorities or number of resources that are required, this job scheduler in the Windows HPC cluster manages the cluster for you. Or you could come here and override that and say, hey, I want to pick nodes 3, 2, and 7 on the latent cluster. Why? For example, you may have used PyCUDA, which uses GPUs to do further streaming programming. You say, these are the nodes that actually have a GPU on it, and I want to make sure that scheduler sends it to these particular nodes. In this case, we're not demoing that, but the capability is there. So after I've done that, Control-S, go back to my program, and it's really that simple. I just go ahead and hit F5, having put a breakpoint. And if you look in the lower left corner, you will see that we're publishing, we're gathering all your code, all the various dependencies, and putting it on a share that all the nodes can see. The job is being submitted to the scheduler. In fact, let me switch to the cluster manager. So this is the HPC job management console. And here we see that for my jobs, in the active ones, there's an MPI debugging job that's going on. If I double click on it, I can look at the subtasks that are within that job that essentially do preparation of the nodes, then actually running the code, and eventually cleaning it up, right? So this is great. We'll go back to our debugging. We see that communication to all the nodes has been established. The usual autos, locals, watch windows. You can look at call stacks and breakpoints. So these are my 8 ranks or 8 processes from 0 to 7. And as I come to each of the breakpoints in each separate instance, let me just hit F5. You will see that the arrow jump around. They get moved from the pause state to the break state. And eventually, they keep running once I go past the last one. And we should see some messages about the job having finished. And hopefully, somewhere I have calculated pi. Here we go. Computed value of pi is 3.11.
So close enough.
Yeah. So not the most accurate way of calculating pi, but it demonstrates what we need to do. And the way, essentially, the programming model works, it's really simple. You can do lots of complex stuff in it. But it's basically message passing, broadcasting, and then gathering jobs. And there's a lot of high-performance networking machinery underneath. So you can do many, many gigabytes pass through any node to any node in a second. So if you've got massive amounts of data using RDMA, InfiniBand networks, and so on, Windows HPC has fantastic support for this. Then you would say, but why would I want to do Python if I'm doing high-performance computing, stuff like this? Goes back to the whole insight thing. With Python, you can very quickly model your algorithm. You can figure out what you want to do and then do the heavy lifting using the optimized MPI libraries. So this is what it's really good for. This is available for the integrated shell as well. So if you go to the website, it has all the instructions on how to set up a cluster, how to set up the Windows HPC and configure it with the right wrappers and go ahead and do some fun MPI programming. Speaking of the website, let me just quickly to give you an overview of what's there. I think I have it right here. Yeah. Okay. So the address is pytools.codeplex.com, or if you just search in your favorite search engine for PTVS or Python tools for Visual Studio, you'll end up here. By the way, are you going to demo inline graphics today?
Yep.
Fantastic.
That's up next.
Excellent. Okay. So basically the overview here, you will see what the plugin does.
So just to show that this is real, people, I'm now in, this is great. I don't want you to burn that your laptop.
Yeah. Dino sneezed.
I could use a new laptop.
It looks like it. We're not going to have like 1,000 instances of Visual Studio.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool. All right. So, and we have a bunch of videos. You can actually look at this stuff. Each of the features is covered. But some of the things you'll find on the website are some of our partner projects, such as Show that we discussed, Solver is an optimization framework, are in Python, and IPython, another enhanced shell for Python that Dino hopefully will demo today.
Yep.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's the end of our big compute demo. There's another cool feature that's coming. Hopefully we'll do another webcast on it. This was about big compute. We have one coming about big data. And that essentially is using Python for doing Hadoop and Dryad style, like terabytes of log processing, et cetera, in a very natural way from Visual Studio in Python. And we'll talk to you about that soon.
Excellent.
Dino, take it over.
All right. If you can unplug there.
So while he's plugging in, I do have one question for
sure.
you. Are you seeing a lot of people using sort of the Python higher level on top of, say, DirectX or some C library targeting the GPU? You said CUDA.
Yeah.
So one popular solution out there is called Pygame, which is a library for Python for developing games in Python. And I'll actually show you a demo of that, too, in a little bit.
Awesome.
So it won't have any 3D or anything like that, but it'll have some pretty graphics.
Will it be free?
Pygame's free.
And what about the support for it from Python?
What I'll show you will be free, too.
Excellent.
Okay, so here we have the interactive window inside of Visual Studio. And this is a feature that you can get to through View, Other Windows, and we have a selection of an interactive window for each interpreter that you have configured. And in Tools Options, there's some options to configure various options for that. I have this set up right now to run in what's called IPython mode. IPython is an advanced interactive REPL for Python. It has a bunch of features for just making it easy to do advanced introspection into your code. So I can do something like x equals 42.
Initial startup.
Yeah. And then I can do question mark x, and it'll give me some information about what x is. And it has a whole bunch of other advanced commands as well that I won't go into.
Is IPython available on all OSs?
Yes. So it's just a Python package. It has a very slim set of dependencies, and it works on Windows, OS X, Linux, wherever you want to do it.
Okay.
It has built-in support for talking to different HPC environments, so like it has support for WinHPC and other cluster environments.
We should do a shout out to Fernando and Brian for having worked on IPython and doing some Windows HPC integration. Go to YouTube or their website, and they have lots of cool stuff there.
But so what I'm going to show you here is actually a new feature that we have in PTVS 1.1, which is support for our inline graphics inside of the REPL. So I'm going to bring in the PyLab module, which has got a whole bunch of helpers. I'm going to bring in this from Cy. Let's get the completion. Bring in this function. And let's go ahead and make some data. And let's plot some stuff. So there we go. We just we created a plot. It gets returned, and IPython tells us to output it, and output it we do right inside of the REPL. So if you're working You're doing a bunch of scientific stuff. You can use matplotlib, which is a very popular Python library that's out there for plotting and displaying data. It has a bunch of different modes it can display data. This is just one of them.
The important thing is it's well beyond what you could do in PowerPoint or tools like that.
And yeah.
Lots of data thrown at it, lots of scientific style and statistic style, you know, even R style charts are available.
And you have this real programming language to work on the data. You have this interactive window where you can look at the data, inspect it, graph it, change it, update your code, and eventually take the code that you've developed and send it back into your project inside of Visual Studio. So it's a great way to develop code interactively. And you know, it's also, you can do interactive cluster development versus sort of the batch mode stuff with MPI. So it's a great, great tool to have in your toolbox.
So we should probably clarify, if I don't have IPython, do I still have a REPL in PTVS?
Yes, absolutely. So I can come in here and I can open the Python 3.2 REPL instead. And this is just kind of the normal REPL that you're used to. You can see it has the normal prompts you're used to. It's got nice multi-line editing. This is available. The multi-line editing is available in all of the REPLs, so it's not anything special here, but I can go up and, you know, change my function definition. So it gives you a very rich REPL that's better than working at just kind of the plain command prompt. Okay, so that's the REPL, and I have one final demo, which is kind of really cool. So here I have a connect, so what we're doing in addition to all of the Visual Studio stuff is we're actually looking at ways we can take other libraries on Windows, wrap them up, and provide a really good experience to Python developers with those libraries. So one of those is connect. And so I've created a library called PyConnect. This is a wrapper around the Connect SDK, which is freely available in beta. And I'm using Pygame here, which we talked about a little bit earlier, in order to actually do this demo. So what I have is, this is the main program, and you can see here I'm going to create a Connect runtime. I can start enabling sending skeleton events, hook those events, open my video streams, and then eventually this just goes into your typical event loop using Pygame, and all of the Connect stuff will actually just post events into my event loop. So that I can just process them all there. So let's go ahead and run this. And so we start off, and we are in the depth camera, which is the reason why this looks so very strange. But I can switch to the video camera here, and you can see we've got skeleton tracking going on.
So if I come into the picture, will it crash?
Yeah, join me. No, okay. No.
This would be fun to crash. You can demo the debugger then.
We'll get two skeletons going on.
Okay, I look very deformed.
Yeah, it's not getting your legs, so it's going to be a little confused.
Awesome.
You know, this is just kind of, this is similar to the demo that ships with the Connect SDK, but it's actually all written in Python. I can control the camera.
I know,
that
was... a phantom skeleton. It detected a ghost. This is Connect 2.0, now with support for the Unreal. Okay, so, and finally, we talked about debugging some. So I can set a breakpoint in here. We'll hit the breakpoint. Let me actually go ahead and set my breakpoint down here in our skeleton event instead. So here we get it, and I can do things, you know, this is your typical Visual Studio experience, so I can drill into this, and we can see this is the skeleton that's currently tracked, which is me. I can see the positions of the skeleton, so the these are interop objects, so they're a little bit raw, showing the underlying Connect API, actually. But, you know, here's all of the positions that we've tracked, and it's pretty good stuff. We've got the immediate window, of course, so I can come over here and, you know, look at skeletons this way, or I could use the watch window, which is over here. drill in that way. We support pretty much all of the features that you'd expect out of the Visual Studio Bugger. So, you know, we have just my code support now, so that if you don't want to break in standard library code, you can do that. We have conditional breakpoints. What else is the Visual Studio Bugger support?
Well, let me ask you. A lot of times, if I, in other Python environments, I can just point at a file and start working without really creating a Visual Studio project and so on. Can I do that with PTVS?
So that's actually a feature that's missing right now. You do need a project to launch the debugger. We will probably add support for that for our next release, though.
But just how about just opening a file and starting editing it to get IntelliSense and so on?
That totally works. So when you open raw files, we will model the directory that you're in, and we'll actually go up and search. If you open like a file deep in a package somewhere, we'll actually model the whole parent directory up to where the package ends, so that you'll just open one file and you'll start getting completion across the entire thing.
And if I have a boatload of files in a directory, if I just want to bring them into a Visual Studio project, how do I do that?
We have a feature called File, New Project from Existing Code. And I'm debugging right now, so it's not available. But if I wasn't, it would ask you for the directory, and you point it at it, and it would suck in all the files that are there.
Okay.
That's changed a little bit for 1.1, so it's a little more aggressive about sucking in files. Before, it only sucked in packages, and now it'll bring in all the files in that directory.
So all this stuff, so 1.0 is out, and it was out in August. You can go download it. And I'm looking at the website. There's been 16,000 downloads in the last 30 days, which is awesome. But we want to double that. You know, if we get a lot of downloads, we might get more resources, and we can do more features. So please, download and use this stuff.
And give us your feedback.
Oh, absolutely. And we're very, very responsive on the website. If you go to the discussions tab or the issue tracker, we very quickly, like within a day, you're basically talking to the development team. There's no, you know, Microsoft support that you have to go through. I mean, it's just us and you guys.
And even better, you know, if you don't want to talk to us for some reason, if you decide we suck, you can just go and make the change yourself, because it's all open source. And if you give us that change back, we will almost certainly accept it back, unless there's something wrong with it, and it'll go into the product, and people will be using your changes, whether it's a bug fix or new features or whatever you'd like. We're open to, you know, not just your feedback, but your contributions too.
And if it's a, should we just say that if it's a significant bug fix, we will give them a T-shirt?
Sure.
He wasn't too sure. But, sure.
You're buying the T-shirts, right?
Right? I'll buy the T-shirt. We've got a really cool T-shirt. We'll be happy to send one to you. Let's see, what are the things? So in terms of release schedule, so 1.0 is out. 1.1 alpha is going to go out sometime in the October-November time frame.
And it's probably out if you're seeing this.
Yep. Yes, by now.
It is October as we film this.
Yes. And we hope to RTM sometime early next year. And then we're going for a big, massive 2.0 later on in 2011.
That's awesome, you guys. Now, what does RTM actually mean, though? You're going to ship in the product?
No. Actually...
Well, I mean, that's a fair question, right?
It's a totally fair
first
question.
Because you are first class. You're just not shipped in the product.
Yeah. So RTW would be the more... correct acronym.
Thank you. Right. Okay.
It'll be available on CodePlex for
downloading.
Turn
the M upside down.
Exactly. Yep. and the reason we actually like it that way for now is that it allows us to do very rapid turnarounds. And that's really been appreciated by the community as well. They file a bug, it gets fixed. We have instructions on how to do the builds yourself, complete step by step. And a lot of people are really, really on the bleeding edge with us. And that's fantastic. So you can wait for the builds or you can do them yourself.
Awesome.
Okay.
Hey, guys, great job. And let's keep you guys coming through here and learn more and more as you go on.
We'll be happy to, perhaps around RTW next year.
Awesome.
Okay.
Cool, man.
Right.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Download this.
Thank you.